Nice to have you on the program. The panel, RNZ National, Shane Tepo and Nalini Baruch are with me. Anna says, Wallace, I'm glad to live in a country where our taxes actually get invested in our people. I'm so happy about the Farm Act boost. Everything isn't perfect, but we can keep on trying to get better. Our leaders from either main party don't end up parking up $500 million yachts in other countries, and a cloud of mystery surrounds how they got that money in the first place. I am thankful to live in Aotearoa, says Anna. So a range of responses on your report cards, from A pluses through to Bs, quite a few Bs, some Cs, and a few fails in the budget, basically just a band-aid. But on that, a change to child support payments will mean sole parents will get the full amount from child support, something the government says will lift 14,000 children out of poverty. More than 2 million New Zealanders will get a one-off $350 sweetener as part of the budget's centrepiece billion-dollar cost of living relief package. So you've got to be aged over 18 and eligible for the $350 payment unless you earn more than $70,000 a year or already receive the winter energy payment. So with us is Agnes Margelia, who's the volunteer and spokesperson for Auckland Action Against Poverty. Agnes, nice to have you on the panel.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
No, pleasure's ours. Agnes, how will today's budget announcement affect your whānau?
Well, since the government has chosen not to increase any benefit levels this year, families will be struggling to buy food, pay rent, get medical treatments. Children will be going to school without lunches, even the basic essentials, such as school uniforms and stationeries. It's going to affect not just myself, but a lot of families that are currently on the benefit and also receiving low income at the moment, especially with the increase on prices of food, prices on petrol has gone up, and also electricity that was announced not long ago as well, that's gone up. So the income that we're receiving at the moment that hasn't been increased, it's going to be, the people are going to pay the price for it, especially our children. And it's going to be, they're going to be stuck in the cycle of poverty even more.
How much have you noticed to your household bills with inflation? Has it really impacted over the past few months?
It definitely has. Some weeks we're not able to pay for example, a rent, power bill, and also like basic essential utilities. Some weeks we can't pay it because we have to fork out the money and buy something else or buy extra food or any other emergency costs that come our way, such as tangies, because we've had a lot of people pass over the last few months and stuff. Yeah. So people are struggling to get on their feet already. And with the increase of prices and everything, people are just not managing at all. So a lot of families are going to be struggling even more now.
Yeah, we've got a panel with us that I want to ask a question or a comment, but can I just address, if Grant Robinson here is here, he'd probably say, well, actually, you know, they did address the issues regarding benefit levels. That was last budget.
That's right, and it's still not enough. I mean, the winter energy payment, I know they doubled it last year due to COVID.
This year,
they haven't doubled it again. So that was a kind of another loss of income for the families on the benefit. And it hasn't made any difference at all.
Nalini.
Hi, Agnes. Lovely to hear from you. The thing about the winter energy bill made me think of what other things that government could find that they could then also support, you know, so not necessarily things that only affect you during winter, but what about summer requirements and parts of, you know, certain families having certain needs that could be more targeted that government could provide for. In your wish list, what are these things?
Well, in my wish list, I wish for the government to increase all income to be livable incomes and also for universal services such as dental treatment and public transport to be free. This budget is I can say that it's based on health and it's looking after the health, and that I love that, I do. So I would wish for the government to target it in a different way and maybe support the people by offering free transport, providing free transport and free dental treatment. That'll be a good start to be honest, and also for to have, you know, fuel tax reduction, not a reduction, but to have fuel tax cap, you know, because petrol is going up all the time and people can't afford petrol to get to and from. So my wish would be that.
Sorry, I had the shock of my life 2 nights ago driving back from Wellington to Martinborough. I had to fill up in Wellington. It's for the first time, it cost me more than $200 to fill my car. And absolutely, the ridiculous thing was, yeah, at $3.30 a litre, the ridiculous thing I felt was that after I complained all the way, we got to Upper Hutt. And in Upper Hutt, fuel was same fuel, same type, 98, I think it's called, is 15 cents cheaper.
Cheaper.
And I thought, yes. And my thought immediately went to all the people that travel all the way from Wellington to Wairarapa and Wairarapa to Wellington for work. How can they afford? How can they afford fuel like fuel set at prices like $3.30? And what is a 2 month extension going to achieve?
All right, stay there, Agnes. We'll bring Shane in.
Yes. What can I say, Agnes? It's not nearly good enough for people who need it most. But you know, I think that, you know, there have been some mechanisms put in place the last few years that have made life a little bit easier. But we've got to do a lot more. No, people can't afford the fuel prices that they as they stand. But we as a society can't afford to rely on fossil fuel. We've got to have a just transition across to reusable energy. And it's and in fact, it's the poorest of the poor communities that will pay the price of this climate crisis. And we've just got to have a just transition. We've got to have a particularly public transport. I think you're right. I think we should have fully funded public transport. I think we're halfway there, and we can move the mechanism even better. But you know, reducing fuel tax isn't the long term answer. We've got to move towards renewables.
Agnes, thank you for being with us on the panel, and look, again, appreciate your time as always.
Most welcome. Thank you.
Agnes Margiela, volunteer and spokesperson for Auckland Action Against Poverty. Someone's not impressed though. Someone says, "Hey, this is a D from me. A budget going backwards, not addressing the serious threat of inflation. Hashtag end the spend," says someone. 19 to 5, the panel, RNZ National. So back to the budget, and with us is Jeff Nightingale from PricewaterhouseCoopers, who has been in the lockup with the PwC team. He's been analysing the budget. Jeff, kia ora. How did the figures stack up for you, Jeff? And Shanville, he didn't want to give it a report card. He didn't want to give it a B or a C like Shane. Do you give it a letter?
Kia ora, Wallace. Well, look, I'll give it a letter, I think, but I think the Minister of Finance has done a pretty reasonable job in complex environment. Well, let me just preface this. You know, COVID, inflation, geopolitical risks, trade disruption, the debt track. I think it's a B+. But maybe I'm at a step.
A B+. Again, what I addressed with Shanbel, forecast inflation forecast peak around 6.9% in the middle of this year before easing to 5.2% next year. Any issues with you regarding inflation? You might have heard that texter saying rampant inflation, hashtag end the spend.
Yeah, well, I think the sobering thing about the budget track is that inflation is embedded. It's not temporary. And, you know, it takes till 2025 to get back down into the Reserve Bank target range of 2.7. And so the points that Agnes was making just before, I mean, they're real and pressing. This inflation will be driving up costs. There's some slight good news underlying that, and in that wage inflation is forecast to rise, is forecast to catch 6%. Up next year and then go ahead. Yep. So, that inflation is not good news.
Okay, Shane.
But again, I ask you: we hear these terms "end the spend." How much is our current spend contributing in terms of inflation, and how much of it is external?
There's no doubt that the fiscal stimulus that the government has used to get us through COVID has had some contribution to inflation, but you've got to trade off the damage done to inflation with all the good things done by that COVID spend. It's really important. And inflation starts to ease off as the COVID spend eases back. But another huge part of that inflation is geopolitical. It's global. It's imported. It's because of the war in Ukraine feeding into fuel and petrol prices. It's because of supply chain disruption caused by COVID, meaning it's more expensive. Shipping containers are four times now to get to New Zealand. And that all cascades through the chain and drives inflation. So, and some of that thing, that you know, our government can't control that.
And what's the alternative? When folks say cut the spend, what are they actually saying? Are they saying that they want an austerity budget? We know how that crashes economies, and we know how that affects the poorest of the poor.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing for a government is not necessarily cutting the spend, but it's what you spend the money on. Mm. And you've got to try and spend the money in ways that don't drive inflation, and that might be infrastructure, but at the same time, unemployment's very low. So if you go on a big infrastructure building program, that feeds back around into demand for wages, and that drives it up. So it is very tricky to manage the inflation. And I think one of the things the government's doing is it is trying to manage the inflation, but it's also trying to mitigate the effects with the cost of living payment, the new $350 payment and other things.
All right. Nalini.
Hi, Jeff. What's your view on the unemployment rate and whether we need to maybe open the borders and let more people in to help with that?
Yeah, well, the unemployment rate is a historic low, 3.2%. It's forecast to rise over the next 4 years up to about 4.7%. And so I think while at the moment we are very tight for employment, and I think many employers, business employers, would like to see the borders more open so that we can bring in additional workforce. And that is a factor, that is going to be a factor in inflation. It's driving wage and salary rises. But I think that unemployment forecast rising over the forecast period does show that tight labour market should ease in the next year or so.
Nice to have on the program, Jeff. Very quick comment from Shane.
Just what I want to ensure, we have to get those border mechanisms right, but what we don't want mass migration where our migrants get ripped off, and at the same time it lowers real wages. Yep. We've got to get the balance right.
Right, yes. That was Jeff Nightingale there from PricewaterhouseCoopers. Now, one thing we haven't talked about actually, and this you might hear more about it on Morning Report tomorrow or Checkpoint, but one sector has been crying out for years for more funding. And I just got an email from Hillary who says there are major developments in one area that people have asked for years, and that is the area of disability. Disability yep. support, $934 million for a disability system. It's transformational, says Hillary, who works in this space. $735 million, for example, for service sustainability with an additional demand expected. So there's a lot of cash in that area, which has been, or some those in the sector would say, has been incredibly underfunded for a long time. Let's move totally away from the budget now. Let's bring in some other issues. And I saw this and I thought this was fascinating. Our next guest has fought for 30 years to protect native trees from getting the chop. He's so outraged that no management system exists when it comes to cutting down significant or native trees. There's no protection for ancient native trees on private land. Instead, it is up to the council's district plans. Now, this was raised as an issue by the Northern Advocate, who bemoaned the lack of protection for some of Northland's oldest residents. So with us is Paul Gosling, arborist. Kia ora, Paul.
Yes, good afternoon.
Okay, so sure, private land, I've got a 100-year-old Cody, beautiful tree, mm-hmm. private land, surely I cannot cut that down in Northland or Auckland.
No, that is incorrect. There is no automatic protection for ancient native trees on private land.
No.
Unless a tree is offered up for protection, it is not automatically protected. Now, there are methods of protection of trees. The only automatic protection mechanism is the significant natural area overlaid in the district plan. Now, there's about four others. One's the QE2, another private land title covenant. There's another few. But unless The other four are voluntary. So unless it's offered up, it's open slaughter. That 100-year-old kauri can come down prior to any building. You can actually remove that kauri tree off private land without any permission to the district council in most provinces, and then you can apply for building consent afterwards, and the council will come along and say, oh, well, in actual fact, there's no environmental effects. There's no trees here.
Okay.
You go ahead and build.
Well, I didn't know that. If I were to come back to you, Paul, and say, yep, at the heart of it, this is about property rights. I own the land. It's my land, mate. If I want to have that 100-year-old tortoise or kauri down, it's my business, not yours.
Yes, I totally understand that. Now, there comes a point where you have to manage the environment, and part of the problem with this, the managing the environment, is that trees haven't been accurately identified in the glossary of terms or the definitions in the entire reference to the government. In other words, their baseline documents just say indigenous vegetation, and there's no age, absolutely zero reference to age whatsoever. So it's just.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was news to me. Around the panel on this particular one, and we'll get a comment back from you, Paul. Did you know this? You could have a 100-year-old kauri on your tree, Nalini, and you, as the owner, could just get the chainsaw and cut it.
Yes, I did know, and people who have probably done it probably have said it was in the way of the drainage, or, you know, it was going to cause problems once I built my house over it and foundation will lift and all of that. My question, could we make obviously we're asking for some sort of a heritage protection, and yes, is it possible maybe to make it part of our climate change initiative?
Oh, absolutely, yes. With the ever-increasing obliteration of our biodiversity, where do you think these birds and insects are going to live? Do you think they're going to live on the ground? I mean, we have to house these jolly things, and if you go cutting down their houses all the time, there's absolutely zero future for our wildlife.
Shame.
I know about this because it's my living reality. My house is heritage to protect them, but the beautiful kauri that I have on my property and the tupu to kawa trees are not.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Well said.
Yeah.
So you know this. So what? Some could argue, Paul, this is against your interest as an arborist to want to protect trees. I mean, there you are every day, Paul, willy-nilly cutting down trees. I know
absolutely
you.
Absolutely not. No, I rebuke that completely. Look, I would rather trim a tree 10 times than cut it down once. That's ridiculous. That's completely against the business model. The other thing is, there's very little respect given to the animals inside it, the erosion control. Lost me train of thought there.
No, good on you, Paul.
The crux of it is that this is very, very exciting that we can now look to have on the radar consciousness of protecting 500-year-old trees automatically or 1,000-year-old tree. And that is the mechanism that one could do that is very simply to introduce the Native Tree Act. That would actually line up with the Forest Amendments Act, the Forestry Act, the Wildlife Act. Only by adding one additional extra law would there be one more layer of, at least a layer of a measure of the losses. There is absolutely no data collected on how many trees are being cut down per day, per week, per month, per year, per decade.
We're going to come back to this, Paul. Is it as simple a fix as that? Well, not that it's simple, but
thought about it for 30 years, and for many, many years, and it's actually reasonably simple. It's quite a... that's about all I can come up with, and we need help, man. And it's all very good coming on the program, advising, you know, enlightening people. But we want an action plan and some momentum in place, because this has been going on way too long.
Paul Gosden, the arborist, kia ora, Paul, who is absolutely passionate about the fact that there is no protection for, your 100-year-old kauri on private land. It's up to council's district plans. What do you think? You can email me, thepanel@rnz.co.nz. Shane Tipo, Nalini Baruch with me today. And finally, the term cat burglar. has taken on a whole new meaning in Tauranga, where the owner of two kleptomaniac cats have noticed their felines' felonies are so similar they believe they've been working together in a cat gang, no less. Gary and Snow have been living in the same suburb of Tauranga for years, although Gary has recently moved to another suburb. The pair seem to have a penchant, is that how you say it, for clothes in particular. Snow is owned by Candice Purcell, who's now with us on the panel to talk about the cat gang. Candice, welcome.
Hi.
Now, what is one of the strangest things that Snow has brought home?
Probably, other than alive animals, because she does do that as well, would be the mop. She's recently just bought in a mop head and a KFC work shirt are the two most probably interesting out of the many, many years of clothes we've had.
A mop, KFC work shirt, and I understand quite partial to dirty undies.
Yeah, so I don't know if she's actually breaking into people's homes or going. I don't know what she's doing, but sometimes, not very often, we get dirty stuff, socks, underwear,
goodness.
Sometimes men's shirts.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't. Unbelievable, Shane. Have you heard about this sort of kleptomaniac ism in cats?
Yeah, of course. It's just the nature. Can I ask a question? Your local bird life, do you have any?
Yes.
You do? Because, you know. No, but just serious for a minute, and I'm not picking on you particularly. Shouldn't you be more responsible in terms of what your cats are doing and where they're up to? Because I reckon if they're stealing from the next
door. Can I just interrupt, Drew, for a second? I own two ducks, Bonnie and Clyde.
Bird.
So, yeah.
What about the birds
as well. So.
Yeah. But seriously, yeah, I think I've owned cats before. We need to take. Yeah, no, but I had cats before. I think we've got to take more, greater responsibility for our cats.
All right, let's, Candice, stay there. Actually, while we can I hear you? So Shane's putting the lens on the sort of native issue. We talked about this before on the panel.
Fully understand it. Yeah. It's just funny because we own ducks, so we've got ducks and cats.
You've got ducks and cats?
Yeah. So the ducks and cats have been around the same time. They've grown up together. So we don't get boredom birds if she brings in stuff. It's more like rats, and we live near a waterway, so we get quite a lot of mice and water rats. So
right, okay.
Stuff, which I'm quite happy with her catching.
And mops and KFC workwear. Nalini.
Yep.
Hi, Candice. I have a cat. He's 13. He tends to bring mice. And often not dead, and then releases them in the house, which is not helpful. I never quite understand why they do it. Why do they pick it up and then bring it all the way home? Is it it's a gratification? Is it saying, Mum, I love you, here it is, and I brought you a present?
I have no idea. I've always wondered because Snow's always, since a kitten, has bought in random items of people's clothing. That's just been her go-to. But she does the same sometimes, but usually she'll kill the mice and then bring it to me dead. I'm not sure why they feel the need to bring it back, anything back. I'd really appreciate if she didn't bring me back dirty underwear.
Yeah, totally. Good on you, Candice. And it's lovely to have you on the panel. Thank you for enlightening us about this wonderful cat gang. Wonderful.
Awesome.
Very, very cool. Shane Tipou, goodness gracious me, jumping in there. This is this is Gary and Snow. They're a lovely, lovely cat gang. You know, cats, we love our cats here in Aotearoa. Love them. And here you go, slamming someone on the panel.
No, what? The reason they're doing that because they're cats, and cats by their very nature are predatory.
But cats also provide solace. They provide a heart to the home, don't they? That's why we have some of the most cats in the whole world, Shane, because we love them. They're part of our fun. They're part of our family.
I get that. That's why I think they should by compulsion be registered, and they should have little bells on them, and we should keep them in our homes. We let them wander too much. And they killed the mice and they killed the birds. That's just the reality of the situation.
But Snow doesn't. Snow just collects mops.
No. If he's killing rats, he's doing other things too. That's just the very nature.
Mm. Yes, we have discussed this on the panel. Nalini, what about you? Yeah. Are you a cat lover or you side with Shane?
Oh no, I love my Dylan. He's like a child to me. And if I can eat, kill animals for my own consumption, he can eat animals for, kill and eat his animals for consumption.
But not, but he's not native birds. Kill and not eat native natives. Birds.
Not kiwi, not kiwi.
No, definitely not.
All right, you too, Shane.
I've never seen you bring one.
Goodbye, everyone. Shane, Nalini, kia ora. I'm Wallace Chapman. Checkpoint next.